Hello, and welcome to Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rena Foreman, and today we're going to be studying Parakeh, Chapter 5 in Kohelet. As we open Parakeh, I want to start with a pasuk that gives us what seems to be an unremarkable piece of advice. But pay attention, because this could be a key to help us unlock the parak. Al tevahel al picha. Don't be rash with your mouth. Relibcha al yamaher lo tzitavar. Nor let your heart be hasty to utter any word. Now here's my question. Where in Tanakh do we encounter this exact phrase, this precise advice about not speaking hastily when confronted with overwhelming power? Think about it. Al tevahel. Don't be rash. Don't panic. Where have we seen that before? The answer takes us right back to our hidden Yosef story. When Yosef reveals himself to his brothers, what's their reaction? V'lo yachlu echav la'anot oto, ki nivhalu mipanav. The brothers, they couldn't answer him because they were nivhalu at his presence. So the same Hebrew root, tevahel and nivhalu. They were overwhelmed, panicked, unable to speak. And what does Yosef say to them? Kishuna elai, come near to me. But gently, carefully, no rash words, no hasty explanations. Continuing on, Ki Elokim b'shamayim v'ata la'aretz. For God Hashem is in heaven and you are on earth. There's an infinite gap between your limited perspective and divine understanding. The brothers are standing before someone who now seems kamocha k'paro, like Paro himself, godlike in power. In that moment, yiyu dvarecha ma'atim. Let your words be few, was the wisest counsel possible. So once again, we're deep in Yosef territory. Parakeh continues the hidden story we've been tracing through Kohelet, the story of how corruption spreads through society. And now, most complexly, if that's a word, what happens when those who have suffered gain the power to change things. We left off with Yelet Misken V'chacham, a poor, pathetic, and wise child who went from prison to rule. Mibeit hasurim yatzalim loch. But the question Parakeh explores is perhaps the most psychologically challenging in all of Kohelet. What happens when victims gain power? Do they break cycles of oppression, or do they sometimes perpetuate them in unexpected ways? Ki baha chalom berov inyan, for when dreams come true through much business. This has to be about Yosef's dreams finally becoming fulfilled, his brothers bowing before him, just as the sheaves in his dream, his chalom, bowed in his childhood vision. V'kol k'sil berov dvarim, and the voice of a fool comes through many words. This is the moment for silence, for letting the dream's profound fulfillment speak for itself. The chapter then shifts to the crucial theme of keeping vows, Kasher Tidor Neder Lelokim Al Ta'acher L'Shalmo, which connects directly to Yehuda's promise. When you make a promise, make sure to keep it. And that's what Yehuda promises about Binyamin and his determination to keep his promise at any cost. But I want to move to the heart of Shlomo's analysis. Im Oshek Rash V'Gezel Mishpat V'Tzedek Tereh B'Mdina Al Titzma Al Chefetz. If you see in a province the oppression of the poor and the violent taking away of justice and righteousness, don't marvel at the matter, for the high official is watched by a higher, and there are higher ones over him. That's the rest of the pasuk. Gavoa Me'al Gavoa Shomer Ugvohim Alehem. Here's Shlomo asking the crucial question. How does systematic oppression actually work? How can well-intentioned people find themselves in positions where their policies cause suffering? Al titma ala chefetz. Don't marvel at the matter. Don't be surprised when this happens. Why? Ki gavoa me'al gavoa shomer ugvohim alehem. Because the official high officer is watched by a higher. This is brilliant bureaucratic analysis. Each person reports to someone above them, and nobody sees the full picture of suffering at the bottom. The person at the top isn't necessarily evil. They're insulated from consequences by the layers of administration. And how does this connect to Yosef? Here, we need to pause and understand something crucial about what went wrong with even the most well-intentioned plans. When Yosef originally interpreted Paro's dreams and proposed his solution, the plan was clear. Gather grain during the 7 years of plenty, the years of Sova, and then distribute it during the 7 years of famine, of Ra'av. And the assumption was that this would be a divine gift, channeled through human stewardship. Paro had recognized Yosef's wisdom as Ein avon v'chacham kamocha, there is none as discerning and wise as you, because acharei hodia Elokim otcha et kol zot, God has shown you all of this. The grain that would save Mitzrayim wasn't Paro's achievement. It was God's gift, revealed through divine dreams and managed through the divine wisdom. Paro was meant to be a pakid, a guardian, a steward of this gift, just as Yosef appointed pakidim throughout Egypt, officers whose job was literally to guard that which was entrusted to them. So Paro himself was the chief bearer of this divine trust. And the original plan seemed to envision the crown gathering the grain and then distributing it, presumably freely, to save the people during the famine. After all, how do you charge people for a gift from God that was revealed precisely to save their lives? But something shifted in those intervening years. By the time the famine arrived, Paro's perspective had fundamentally changed. He no longer saw himself as pakid of God's gift. He had come to view the grain as his property, his achievement, his to sell. The divine gift had become royal merchandise. And this is where the bureaucratic layers that Shlomo describes, gavoa me'al gavoa shomer, become so dangerous. Yosef, carrying out what had become Paro's policy, found himself implementing something very different from his original vision. The Torah records Yosef's original plan, and then it also records years later what actually happened when the famine came, and it was time to distribute the grain. V'kach Yosef et kol ha-kesef, Yosef gathered up all the money, ha-nimtza be'eretz Mitzrayim, which was found in Mitzrayim, of Eretz Canaan, b'shever asher ha-im shorim, for the grain that they bought. So when v'yitom ha-kesef, the money was all spent, what came next? First livestock, then sold land, and finally, k'nei tanu et admatenu, buy us and our land for food, and we with our land will be servants to Paro. Havu lanu lechem, give us bread, they begged. But that phrase should sound familiar. Do you remember another moment when people were focused on bread while someone suffered nearby? When the brothers were yochlu lechem, eating bread, they looked up and saw the caravan of Yishmaelim. They were eating while Yosef was crying in the pit. And now the desperate Mitzrim cry, Havu lanu lechem, while their freedom disappears. V'yiken Yosef et kol admat Mitzrayim leParo. So Yosef bought all the land of Mitzrayim for Paro. An entire civilization that entered the famine free emerged as Paro's property. And now we must be clear. Yosef saved these people's lives. His original plan was fundamentally sound and morally grounded. But there is a haunting psychological detail that emerges from this corrupted implementation. How was Yosef originally victimized? His brothers sold him bekesef for silver. He knew intimately what it meant to be reduced to a commodity, to have your freedom purchased with money. And yet, when Paro's perverted version of the plan unfolded, it operated through that same mechanism, kesef, silver. The very instrument of his enslavement became central to policies that, while saving lives, also fundamentally altered the freedom of an entire population. Perhaps the trauma of being sold manifested unconsciously as he found himself implementing Paro's monetized version of what was originally meant to be divine stewardship. And this leads to Shlomo's devastating analysis of wealth and power. Ohev kesef lo yisba kesef. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money. Ome yohev bahamon, and he who loves wealth with his income, this also, gamzeh hevel, this is also nothingness, vanity. Think about Paro gathering all that silver. What would he do with it when he's the only one who has any? Gamzeh hevel, this also is hevel. The system turns to vapor when you realize its futility. Berkot ha-tova rabu achleha, umak yishron le-ba'aleha. Here's the trap. During the 7 years of plenty, the population grew to match the surplus. So when famine came, the crisis was actually worse because there were more people dependent on the system. Umakishon Labalaha, what advantage was there for their owner? Ki'im re'it anav, but to see them with his eyes, just the illusion of control. Metukash not ha'evet, sweet is the sleep of a laborer. Ima'at ve'im harbe, whether he eats little or much. V'asovel ashir, einenu maniach lo lishon. But the full stomach of a rich person will not let him sleep. So here's the cruel irony. The Egyptian farmers could still find peace in their work, whether they eat little or much. But the full stomach of the rich won't let them sleep. Paro, obsessed with guarding his wealth, he couldn't sleep. And tragically, the story began with his sleepless nights and troubling dreams, back in Parshat Miketz. Yesh ra'ah, Shlomo says, Yesh ra'ah chola ra'iti tachat ha'shemesh. Osher shamur leba'alav l'ra'ato. He says, there's grievous evil that I've seen under the sun. Riches that are kept by their owners in order to hurt. The hoarding doesn't benefit the hoarder. It becomes a source of anxiety and moral complexity. Even when ba'avad ha'osher ha'hu b'inyan ra, when those riches are lost, what's passed to the next generation, in b'yado me'uma, nothing in his hand. Kashir yatsa mi'beten imo arom yashuv l'lachet kishaba. As he came from his mother's womb, he'll go back again, naked as he came, and he shall take nothing. Mu'umma, nothing. Lo yisab amalo she'ilech b'yado. Takes nothing for his toil that he may carry away in his hand. This echoes Adam's fundamental condition. Mu'umma lo yisab amalo. Shall take nothing for his toil. All that cursed amal produces nothing that survives death. But then comes the familiar refrain with new meaning. Hine asher ra'iti ani tov asher yafel echol v'lishtot v'lir'ot tova b'chol amalo she'amol tachar ha'shemesh. Mispar yumei chayav. So behold, what I've seen, he says, what I've seen to be good and fitting is to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the amal, all the toil with which one toils under the sun. Mispar yumei chayav, for the few days of his life. Asher natan lo alokim, that God has given him. Ki hu chalko, for that's his portion. After witnessing how even the most well-intentioned plans can be corrupted, how divine stewardship can become royal ownership, how bureaucracy can distance leaders from the consequences of their policies, what's left, Shlomo says, l'achol v'lishtot l'ro'ot tova b'chol malot. Just eat and drink and find enjoyment in your toil. Simple contentment, present focused satisfaction. Ki hu chalko, for this is his portion. Gam kol ha'adam asher natan la'olokim osher nechasim. V'yishlito la'chol mimeni la'tzeit et chalko. V'smoch b'malo zematat elokim hi. Everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them and to accept his lot and rejoice in his toil, matat elokim, it's the gift of God. If you have power, use it for simple enjoyment rather than trying to control vast systems, l'tzeit et chalko, to accept your lot. Don't try to leverage power into comprehensive solutions that can be corrupted by those above or below you. Ki lo harbe yizkor et yumei chayav, ki alokim ma'aneh b'simchat libo. Because he'll not remember the days of his life because God keeps him occupied with joy in his heart. When you're focused on present contentment rather than controlling complex outcomes, you're occupied with joy, ma'aneh b'simchat libo. And that is how Perek Hay ends. So let's sum up. What is Parak 5 revealed through the Yosef lens? We've seen the most psychologically complex truth, how even the most well-intentioned plans can be systematically corrupted. Yosef's original vision, divine stewardship of God's gift to save lives, became perverted into royal ownership and monetized distribution. The pakid, the guardian model, was replaced by a property ownership model. And Yosef found himself implementing policies through bureaucratic layers that shielded decision makers from seeing their full human cost. The silver that once brought Yosef's freedom became central to systems that, however life-saving, also altered others' freedom. Perhaps his trauma manifested unconsciously as he administered Paro's commercialized version of what was meant to be divine grace. This isn't moral condemnation. It's Shlomo's meditation on how power corrupts even the most noble visions, how stewardship can become ownership, how the best intentions can be systematically perverted through bureaucratic distance and psychological blindness. Yet the part doesn't end in despair. Even when divine gifts become real merchandise, when pekidim become bureaucrats insulated from consequences, there's still chelek, portion, simple contentment, present-focused joy, the wisdom to accept limitation rather than grasping for comprehensive control that can be corrupted. In a world where even victims can become trapped in implementing perverted versions of their own noble visions, not through malice, but through systematic corruption and psychological forces beyond conscious control, perhaps the greatest wisdom is voluntary limitation. Choosing contentment over control. Accepting our portion rather than trying to solve everything through systems that can be corrupted by those who transform divine gifts into silver that will ultimately turn to vapor. Whatever our original intentions. The Yosef story becomes a profound meditation on how corruption spreads, not just through evil people, but through the systematic perversion of good plans, the transformation of stewardship into ownership, and the bureaucratic distance that shields us from consequences, but also how wisdom can emerge from recognizing these limits and choosing simchat libo, joy of heart, within them. Today's study is dedicated by Helen and Moshe Sassover in memory of their beloved father and grandfather, Ted Ordon, Mordechai Ben Ephraim, and Miriam Golda, in commemoration of his 10th Yahrzeit. His family is forever grateful for his devotion to family, vision, courage, and optimism. May the merit of our collective learning elevate his neshama and bring unity and peace to Klal Yisrael. Thank you for the opportunity to study together.